Broad topics, broad minds, broad hosts, but not just for broads. This is Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougall.
Welcome to Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougall. Hey, Kim, grab a mic.
Hey, I've decided to show up today.
Join us, won't you? I'm excited for today's show.
I'm off my game a little this morning.
I know, right? You're not the only one. So we are in the studio today with a guest, which always is exciting because we're often remote. So Betsy, now it's Chassie. It's not Chase. Now you. Okay. This is a microphone.
I know.
For you.
I should use it. Sorry. Yeah. Well, come to the show.
So,
yeah. Just move up to the table. That's pretty much
Betsy
how you get to
is
the show.
Like a woman of. She's a producer. She's a writer. She's a podcaster.
A change maker.
A bookmaker and a.
That's my website says.
Yes.
Bookmaker, change maker, filmmaker.
Get into that microphone. And we're also a little off today because. You know, we were all drinking last night. Oh, wait, no, it was just you.
Right, it was just me. I was celebrating and drinking last night, and I woke up this morning feeling a little slow and a little, Jackie wants me to make
pretend the mic is a glass of wine.
Yes. Or actually, maybe that would
make
the
hair,
a little hair of the dog, yeah. Just a little bit.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Broadscast, the hair of the dog. That's our new tagline.
There you go. That's a good thing. So, yeah, I'm all those things and a mom.
All those things. And a mom of two kids.
Yeah, single mom of two really awesome kids.
Yeah. So, and you do a lot of parenting stuff and like parenting your latest project, Meaningful Mom Mag.
That's magazine. Well, it's magazine, but the website's Meaningful Mom Mag.
I wanted to make sure that they could find you because
you
know. So that's start from the beginning. So where you grew up?
I came
up
out
on
of the vagina.
Are you sure? Oh yeah, they didn't do as many C sections.
They
back
didn't
then.
Know. I definitely like children were C sectioning in my case, but I definitely came out of a vagina. My birth was actually filmed for a documentary on natural childbirth.
Your particular birth?
The birth of me.
Oh, wow.
So you were destined to be a filmmaker and...
Well,
yeah.
And it's really funny because I was a stunt baby.
You're making films since birth.
I was a stunt baby because they followed this whole other woman through her pregnancy. And at the last minute, she had to have a C-section. And I was baby number 6 for my mom. And they were like, we need to film someone from the waist down. And my mom was like...
So you were the stand-in.
I was a stunt baby. I had to pass
through
the vagina.
Wow, that's a pretty big stunt for your first time out.
Right?
Wow.
I pulled that one off.
How funny is that, that like they're doing documentaries and then this is what happens. So now they have to like, even documentaries are played with a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I can.
It's like The Bachelor.
I can say that I try really hard not to play with documentaries, but you know, something happens and then you're like, can you do that again? Because I missed it. You know, that happens. But
right. Yeah.
Well,
right.
You stuck the landing, but
I'm
all about the Olympics. I've been sitting here like, how can I make this work?
How can this go to the Olympics?
We've been obsessed with the Olympics. Yeah. At least, you have to.
Yeah,
I can speak for you, right?
Yeah. It's taking up far too much of my time, though. I'm not getting to bed on time. I woke up in the middle of the night. My TV was still on. I didn't realize this. To Usain Bolt winning again, but I'd already watched it.
You have to win
it
if your last name's Bolt.
I know, but I'd already watched it. But I woke up and I got myself all excited again in the middle of the night when I already knew what had happened. I was like, oh, go. Oh, wait, I already know the outcome of this.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
Betsy, have you been watching the Olympics at all?
I have to be really honest. I have not. I have not been watching the Olympics. I suck, apparently, because I'm one of the few people that is not.
Do you normally watch the Olympics?
No, I usually have. And I usually like to get my kids involved. But they've been spending time with their dad. And I've been launching projects. And, you know, I see the post on Facebook. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. She did this. She did that. But I've not really watched anything.
Well, if you see it on Facebook and social media beforehand, why do you need to really tune in for it? I mean, it's so frustrating for me.
I like to watch them.
I do, too. But I know what's happening before because I catch a glimpse of it without even – I was watching the news last night. And they said, all right, next up are all the winners from today. And I was like, wait, where's the remote?
Right.
Because it hadn't even gone on.
They should give you 30 seconds to get out of the room.
Yeah.
Well, it's good, though. I think it's a good practice because we live in a society in which news is instantaneous. And so now it's a good thing to step away from the news for a little while.
Yeah.
Right.
Live in like real time.
Live in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Phelps has been my middle son. I said this last week, I think on the show that I've been letting him stay up really late only if he watches the Olympics with me. I will do anything for kid time.
Did you see his Under Armour ad though?
Who, Michael Phelps?
Michael Phelps. Oh my God.
No.
You have to watch. That's what's floating. I did watch that because it's Michael Phelps and everything. I'm like, oh, I could take a minute and just watch this. And
everyone has time for
right,
that.
Right. You got to. And he has an ad for, now you should call Under Armour and they should pay for the
right,
show today.
Yeah. Right.
But the ad is gorgeous and phenomenal and we'll really inspiring.
We'll find it and put it on
really,
our.
Really powerful piece. So.
Really?
Yeah. So. It's not new to the show that I often have crazy, wacky dreams. And so last night I had a dream about Nathan Adrian, who is like the 6'7" size swimmer, who I've always thought is so adorable. And he was in my dream and he was had the hots for me in my dream.
Nice.
And we were kissing, but the kiss was terrible. I remember in my dream thinking this is a terrible kiss. And then he's like, do you want to come to this party with me? And I'm like, sure. After a terrible kiss, let me go somewhere with you. So we get into the elevator and he shrunk.
What?
And in my dream, he was like 4'8", which
and
was
a bad kisser.
And a bad kisser, but he was like 4'8", which was the size of Simone Biles.
Yeah.
And so I was merging all these people, but I just, and he was trying to rub my feet, and I'm like, but you kiss bad and you're short. And then I woke up. It was bad. I was very disappointed because my visions of Adrian have now been shot to.
You know how I love to do a little dream analysis. What is this one?
I don't
know.
So
you
horny.
Want 6'7" Olympic swimmer and you get bad kissing.
I know, right?
It sounds like one of them is what you see online and the other one's what you end up showing up for the date.
Yeah.
That's
pretty much it.
But you're also a single mom.
I am.
You said, and you're, but you have a boyfriend?
I have a boyfriend.
Are we allowed to go here?
Yeah, we can go anywhere we want.
Okay, like, awesome.
I opened the show with I came out of a vagina. I'm pretty sure we can go wherever we
want
to go.
Awesome.
I have no problem with
that. So how long have you been together?
We've been together 3 years. We've been doing we kind of broke up for a little while, but we're back together now. And it's funny because I'm just going to do a little self-plug. In 2 days, no, not 2 days. I keep thinking
it's tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. Oh, my God. See, I'm stuck in Sunday drinking. Yeah. Still. I'm still on Sunday evening drinking time. I'm launching a campaign for a new TV series called Radical Dating, which is about breaking through the barriers to finding lasting love over 40, because in the U.S. population, like 30 to 35% of the United States population of men and women are single and over 40.
It's what?
Huge. We have a huge divorce rate.
33% of this room.
Yeah. So, see, you can come be one of our clients.
Oh, God.
Kim, this is actually, you before this is actually an intervention.
Yeah. Right, it is. So we're going to, and I met these people, the person that runs this program about a year ago, and the program is amazing. And it's more so about really as a woman or a man connecting with who you are and then you have the ability to really choose wisely.
Because right.
most of us have sucked in our marital or boyfriend choices most
right,
of my life.
Right.
So it's pretty cool. Yeah. So I what's great about my relationship is that even though we kind of broke up, I have a really great relationship with a younger guy, totally younger.
Cougar.
Guy. I'm a little bit of a cougar.
I like it. Yeah.
Like 21 younger?
No, I can't do the 21 younger, but he's not quite 40 yet. How about that?
Okay. Oh, good.
Right.
So yeah, yeah, I'm 46, yeah. But, it's a whole different kind of relationship, which is totally something I've never done in my life. And it's really powerful. And
how did you guys meet?
We met in Mexico.
Oh,
this
on
is
vacation?
So bad. I can't even believe I'm going to say this. He'll probably kill me. But
oh, you just can't swear. That's all.
Okay, good. See, I do. Thank you for
we're on the radio here.
Yeah. I met him in Mexico while filming something and he was on a retreat. And there's kind of a production saying it's not love, it's location, where you just kind of hook up.
Right.
So we totally just hooked up in Mexico and thought that it would just be a fun hookup in Mexico. And it's lasted 3 years.
Wow.
We're still hooking up.
So Kim and I are going to go to Mexico this week.
You should.
Well, I don't need to hook up. I just thought maybe you needed a wingman.
Apparently.
She's always trying to remind everybody that I'm single.
Not in a bad way. I just think, I mean, hello. No, she's giving me the face.
I'm giving you the stink eye. Yeah.
I don't do it in a bad way. I just think she's so amazing.
Do
and,
you want to be in a relationship? Let's just do an intervention.
Yes,
right
that's
now.
No, but that's a great question because I would not. If I, all right, you answer. I'll stop talking.
Of course I do. It just doesn't work for me to meet people. I mean, it's just,
right.
You know, I mean, I live in a very family centric community. Mm-hmm. Everything I do is here. Every one of my friends is married, and it mm-hmm. just makes for a difficult. It's difficult.
And
it's not excuses. Yeah. It's just the reality of my life. I'm not a bar person.
You don't have to be a bar person.
I do online dating, and I loathe it.
Yeah, I hate that.
You know,
you
and
have to check out this radical dating thing. You will dig it because it's really.
How is it radical? Tell us about
it. Well, first of all, it's radical because so when I got divorced 6 years ago or something like that, I don't remember when, you know, I did this course and I was around a lot of divorced women. And what the common theme was, they wanted to get remarried again. And they were all looking to replace the husband they had just divorced. And what they didn't do was, a lot of people don't do the work that they need to do on themselves in order to get into the right relationship.
Right.
We're just trying to get into a relationship. And so a big part of what radical dating is getting really clear on who you are and what you want and what's right, and then not accepting anything else.
Right.
And so in terms of when you're together with a partner, it's a lot different. Like with my relationship with my boyfriend now, you know, we have certain things that we do. We do a specific type of communication every day. We're very connected spiritually, we're connected emotionally, we're connected physically, and it's about the work that's required to keep all that moving forward. And a lot of people get into relationships and they don't do that work,
right?
And, you know, that's really what radical dating is about.
Huh. And is this like a long-term program?
We're shooting it this fall, and it's going to be a web series, or it may be sold to a TV network, but it'll be a series. And I'm not the radical dating expert, so there's five coaches?
Mm-hmm.
So okay. There's five coaches who are going to coach five, a man, and we're doing one man and four women, and we're going to run them through the program.
And so does the man date the four women?
No. Okay. I mean, not he might, I don't know, okay. But no, the point, we were just going to do all women, but I felt, as a filmmaker and a storyteller, I thought, you know, first of all, I think women would appreciate hearing a man's experience going through the same process.
Right.
And they might learn something that they didn't know about how to deal with men and how to communicate. Because most of the time, most of the situations that come up for us come up because we're bad communicators, because we don't know how to really express how we feel.
Right.
So I think watching, most of our viewers will probably be women, and for them to have the experience of watching a man go through the process, I think would be powerful. Four women.
So one of the things that my therapist told me a long time ago is I need to think more like a man when I date. And I used to get really upset with him for telling me that. But part of it was that he's like, you're very emotional. You're very communicative. And he said, but you can't translate what you're trying to say to a man who has limited attention span to some extent. They can only hear part of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. You have to and I realize that with my son, that I have to say things in a way that's different than what I'm actually thinking. But it's not really so much thinking like a man, but it's just adjusting, being truthful to who I am and what I believe in, but then adjusting it so that the person I'm communicating with can receive, and it's not going to be the same for everybody. It took me a long time to understand that, because I kept thinking I'm compromising who I am for a man. Why aren't they doing the work?
Your therapist said it wrong. I hate to bash your therapist, but no, you don't need to think like a man. You just need to think, you need to listen and communicate consciously, which is that, you know, when we interact back and forth, we have, like, have you ever heard of the five love languages?
No. Yes.
Okay.
So that is, have you, that's a goal for the show too.
So
tell us about it.
It's a great book that talks about the different ways in which people give and receive love. And so mm-hmm. when you get into a relationship, a lot of people, in my opinion, and again, I'm only a relationship expert because I've been in a lot of them and screwed a lot of them up. That's okay. My experience on this.
Then I'm an expert in a lot of things.
Yeah. So the biggest reason is because I have this expectation that you will hear, I like to be loved. For me, it's words of affirmation, physical touch, and like gifts and surprises. So those are the ways that I accept and feel loved. So then I then go out and try to love you that way.
Right.
But you might not like love that way.
Right.
You may have a whole different way that you like love. And so the trick in creating a successful relationship, in my opinion, is when I can be safe in knowing that I'm going to get love the way I want it, and then I can give it the way they need it.
Right.
And that's the communication part. That's the part where you go, oh, I have to, if I say to my boyfriend this way, which is the way I want to hear it, he might not hear it. But if I say it this way, which is the way, you know, for him, he has certain things that he likes. So he likes touch as well. So maybe if I'm going to say something hard to him, I might touch him, like touch him on the arm or do something first
right.
to open up the communication.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I hear your point that maybe my therapist said it. I mean, it's sort of tongue in cheek, and I'm taking an entire hour's conversation or
right.
6 years of therapy into one.
No.
But I think that, you know,
I think it's relatable, Kim.
That I get so stuck in the way that what works for me that, you know, I wasn't paying attention to what works right. for other people. And so I think that was the point of what he was. So your show, and I'm saying in that sense, would be helpful, I think, from a man's point of view, so that we can understand that.
Well, and for me, the big thing that I shifted this year for myself was that I used to operate from the place, and I think most of us do, that I just have to say what I say, and it's your job to figure it out.
Right.
And that's true. I talk a lot about this in my books and in my work, in sort of consciousness and conscious awareness. No one else is really responsible for how I react or feel. I'm ultimately responsible for those things.
Right.
However, if I'm truly interested in having a connected, mm-hmm. conscious conversation, I should be aware of how my communication is landing, and therefore not just leave it up to you, but to think about, I really truly want to be heard. What is the way in which I can express it to this person? And then when it's clear they don't hear me, don't get mad at them for not hearing me. Ask them, or ask myself, okay, how can I communicate this in a different way? Or right. how can you hear it so that what I'm really trying to say? Because most of the time we get into a fight because we think someone was a jerk to us. And the truth is, they didn't mean to be a jerk. They're just doing what they know how to do. And we're taking it that they're being a jerk. And that's when the fight happens.
Do you find that dating a younger man is helpful in how you communicate because he's still moldable?
Wow. I'm not even going to say that he's moldable. No, he's not moldable. I think that this is how I parent my kids. Like this is a concept of conscious parenting, where people will often talk about the idea that it's our job to mold our children. And I don't believe in molding anyone. I think people are, and they're molding themselves. And if I create the space for him and my kids to have an experience and grow from it, awesome. It's not my job, nor would I want someone to mold me. But dating, he's very mature, and the fact that he's younger never comes up, except that sometimes it's fun to throw out at dinner parties, like, haha, I got my boyfriend's under 40. Like, but right. other than that, like, it hasn't really ever come up.
Does it come up for him at all?
You know, I don't know. I don't think so. The only way in which it's come up for us is that
you get the discount and he doesn't.
I don't get the discount yet. Not yet. Easy there, girlfriend. I'm not quite there yet. No, it's the...
Kim told a funny.
It's just that I'm not in a space where the idea of having kids excites me. I already have two kids. So mm-hmm. I'm kind of not looking to recreate babydom necessarily. Oh, yeah. So that might be the only place where...
And you think he's probably... That's something
He might or he might not. We've talked about it, and we don't... You know, we're kind of in the space of like, well, none of us are doing that right now anyway. So, you know. It's not right. It's not a deal breaker in our relationship, but it's certainly, this is the part to me about like radical dating and you know, being really upfront with people, is that, you know, it's a lot of times you get in relationships and you kind of put some of these bigger topics
on the back
burner because you're so excited and it's so much fun. And for us, you know, we put some of these topics front and center because we're like, look, if we're going to go really embark on this journey together, then there's some important things that we need to know. So we've discussed the baby thing, and we're at a good place with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important. That's part of, you know, radical communication. It's like, you know, the fear of me telling this person, look, I don't want to have kids, means that I might lose them. But I'd rather do that now than be with them for 3 years and break up because of that.
Right. Right. Or be together for 20 years and have that person secretly look back as like resent or just feel like they never did what they really wanted to do.
Right.
So, but if you go back a little bit to the communication and like thinking like a man and all that. So do you feel like we're raised in a way that you're either a submissive type, which we've talked about a lot on our show, you know, in that you please a man and you need a man and this and this and this, you know, but, or you can do it all and you don't need a man. And like, I feel like it depends on who you talk to.
Mm-hmm.
It's either one or the other, and you don't get that middle ground. So it's very hard for us as women to get to that middle ground on our own, where you can be soft and vulnerable, but also independent.
I just was talking to this with my boyfriend last night about the idea that oftentimes when people refer to the feminine, it's very soft and sweet and gentle and loving and kind and compassionate. And, you know, they don't talk about the fact that being feminine also means you can be decisive. You can make things happen. And that's sort of strong and powerful. And oftentimes what this whole conversation was evoked because he said, well, you're very good at the masculine part too. And I said, well, wait a second. How come you want to call my strong, powerful,
right.
decisive part masculine? Why can't that be a feminine part too? And what you're right. I think what happened is we've been raised in a patriarchal paradigm where, you know, men have to be this way, women have to be this way. And then feminism came in, which was awesome. But what's happened is now we get told things like, if you want to be successful in the business world, which I went through, you have to be like a man. If you want to have a successful relationship, you have to think like a man, which is kind of why I responded that way. Instead of saying, well, let's connect. Each person individually has a masculine and feminine piece. Sometimes the feminine is stronger, sometimes the masculine. But when you can find a way to create connected balance into both of them, then you're actually operating from a space of consciousness and awareness, as opposed to having to find, okay, am I going to be my masculine today, or am I going to be my feminine? You're just you. Did that make any sense?
Yeah. I mean, we talk a lot about, like, you know, labels. I mean, we were even talking about this when it comes to, like, the Olympics, you know, that a couple of the winners have been saying, don't label me adopted. Or Simone Manuel said, I'm not black, I'm just a swimmer, you know. And so we talk about that a lot with, why do we have to fit into a certain category? Why can't we just be?
Because it makes us feel safe.
It's Biles being compared to everybody else. She's like, I'm me.
I saw that. And then there was this horrible thing going on Fox News, which just frightens me, where they were talking about how the girls that are winning should put makeup on before they go to the medal thing. And I was like,
no, they weren't.
Yeah, they were. It was insanity. I was just like, really, really.
Oh, we need to find that.
But yeah, it's on Fox
News. That's a topic.
But it's just because the truth is, if you think about it, like we often say, like, I don't need labels. But if you think about how your brain works, your brain is a categorizing, organizing machine. And so in a way, you've been told the only way that my brain will be able to process information is if I automatically categorize it and label it. And so that's what we just start doing.
Right.
And so that's what we feel better. So when, like, have either of you ever jumped out of a plane?
Yeah.
Yes.
So do you remember, like,
what are the chances of that, P.S.?
Right. And we've all done it.
Both of us. Yeah. And we weren't together.
Uh-huh. Do you remember that moment when you first jumped the first time, and then you jumped out of the plane and you were literally falling, and then for like 10 seconds your brain had no, like, I got nothing is what your brain comes up with.
Yeah.
Like, I got no data.
I do that usually when the show starts here too.
Right. Yeah. So that moment of, like, your brain basically saying, I have nothing to pull up to refer to this with. This is really new.
Right.
That's something that state is so something that most of us never experience past 8 years old. Because our brain has gotten so much data by the time we're like 7 or 8 years old that we're no longer creating that new data. So what is our brain doing? It's labeling and categorizing. And that's what we do. And it makes us feel safe and secure.
That's fascinating.
You know, it doesn't truly bother me, because I think that sometimes there are some clarifying and qualifying labels that are important. But when it becomes the determining factor, or when it becomes
the story
only,
instead of the actual success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do appreciate sometimes, and, like, I don't have a problem with it. It's just when that overshadows the rest of it, you know, that in some way, because you're adopted, or because you're black, or because you're gay, that's a hindrance. Like, okay, this is what I am. And now, like, we've moved on, but we stay there. And I think that's where, you know, the labeling part.
And I think for story and producing purposes, it was nice for the Olympics. Like, you feel like you get to know the athletes, and the more invested you are in them as people, the more you will watch. And that's why they're producing some of the stuff, right? So for Simone Biles, like, it was, I, having an adopted daughter, I mean, we talked about this before, I liked knowing that she was adopted. Like, hey, look, there's, you know, like, my daughter was happy because she wants to be in the Olympics doing gymnastics.
Right.
But then it was like, okay, you did the package, then we're done. Like, let's be done with that.
Right.
And then same with, you know, Simone. It is a huge deal that she's African-American and won the first medal, you know?
Right.
But then if she's not comfortable carrying that, you know, and she's not talking about it, I think we need to kind of let it go. Like you said, we just let her be a winner and be Simone on her own.
Right. But even in the, there was one other, I know we're back at the Olympics, but there was one other race where there was the first white.
Was it the Irish rowers?
Yeah. Was it? Well, there's been a lot of firsts.
Yeah,
Irish
won the first Olympic gold in rowing. They're funny. That's a really funny video. So apparently I have been paying attention to the Olympics, but only like the random fringe stuff, not the actual Olympics.
Right.
The weird.
Well, the rowing one, it was a really funny, I don't know if it was rowing or sailing. I think, I don't know if I said this too, but there was a really funny video that I don't know if it was a legit reporter, but he's like, so I'm watching sailing and I have no idea what's going on because it's just a bunch of boats going the opposite direction and I can't figure out who's who. It was really, and I was like, I think this is like a legit report, because he's like, I think that's Brazil, but I can't see the flag because the boat just turned. Like, it was
based on the reports of, and watching the Olympics, I feel like that was a very real
situation. The one guy in Canada read the whole, I mean, commentated on the race between Phelps and Lochte, and had Lochte as the winner.
Lochte
is the winner. He totally did the whole entire race wrong.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's like, oops, my bad.
But you know,
yeah,
but anyway,
I think they're also, they were drinking with Betsy.
Yeah. You know, I think, I blog for Huffington Post. I blog for a lot of sites. And one of the things that I've noticed, and it's really interesting, is I started to get these emails about how to make your blog successful. And things were like, you know, put lists of threes. Make sure you have words like amazing. And it starts basically cookie cuttering.
Yeah.
Because that's how news just – because, like I said, you know, we live in a society where we can't wait like an hour to get the news right.
Right. Right.
We're just going to start talking about it now even though we really don't know anything. And so it's all about buzzwords and headlines. And what happens for me is that that's where the label – people will go, oh, adopted is a keyword, and thousands of women will Google adopted, and then this article – and that's what it starts coming down to.
Right.
Building Meaningful Mom was really interesting because – you know, I started to think about, well, what are some topics that women would really want to talk about? And then, you know, I started Googling stuff and I'm like, well, everybody wants to talk about this and everybody wants to talk about that. So of course we'll get this and that up. But then what are some unique things that I could bring to the table?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little harder to get those things out there. The site's doing really well. But what's interesting is our number one, we have two number one articles on our site right now. One of them is about cheating husbands, which was like,
went to universal.
The, that was our very first show on broadcast. Do you remember that?
About cheating.
Mm-hmm. And then
snooping.
Snooping? Cheating. Yeah, well, both. This one was about a very, very close friend of mine, still married to her husband, who cheated on her 20 something years ago, and they worked it out. And so she, the whole article is about how to save your marriage if that happens. But it was super popular. And, you know, marriage issues and marriage problems are much more popular than talking about happy marriage. Mm. And it's just interesting that that's just what seems to be more popular. So people tend, when you get into the world of news, they're going to go with that because it's all about how, you know,
if it bleeds, it leads.
Right. How do you get eyes on your stuff when we live in a society where there's like just gazillions of pieces of information flying
around? At the point, though, that it doesn't matter if it's accurate as long as it's first.
No, accuracy is no longer important.
Yeah, and they can fix that later.
Yeah.
You know, a little update. Like, nobody cares if it's accurate.
Right.
So.
Which isn't sad. And I get really frustrated with my friends on Facebook who will post something. Like, especially during the election right now, they'll post some picture and they'll say, this is from Benghazi and look at this. And you're like, actually, that's not. And that has nothing to do with that quote. And you've just completely spread misinformation.
right. Well, we have to take a quick break. We're going to come back with more with Betsy Chassé. I want to say Chassé. Chasson. But we will be right back in just a second.
What does being abroad mean to you?
Abroad tells it like it is.
Doesn't take no for an answer.
She exudes confidence.
A warrior princess of the urban jungle.
Being abroad is being diverse.
Strong enough to do things on your own, but smart enough to know when to ask for help.
We succeed. We get right to the top.
Being abroad is 10% of what happens to you and 90% how you deal with it.
Broadcast, where every broad's voice matters.
Why should you become a broadcast sponsor? Broad multimedia exposure, including radio, web, iTunes, YouTube, and social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
A quick, easy way to reach your target demo, women. Exclusive, limited time only, affordable introductory rates.
Plus 20 years experience in on-air and online marketing. We produce your one-of-a-kind creative in-house, saving you time and money.
For more on becoming a broadcast sponsor, visit broadcast.com today.
You're listening to Broadcast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougal. They're huge in anywhere other than somewhere that you've been before.
Welcome back to Broadcast. just
funny.
Some of the conversations at the break are funnier than anything we could ever talk about. Anyway, we're back with Betsy Chassé, and you are also, you do a podcast called Life Unscripted.
I do.
Yes. How do you have time for everything?
I don't know. I have a uterus.
She's in a fog and she's drunk the whole time. That, you know, lots of things can happen.
It's very relatable, actually.
Yeah. No, I'm really grateful that in my life, I love what I do. And so it never feels busy or overwhelming or hard. It just feels like my whole philosophy in life is I'm just going to have as much fun as humanly possible. And so everything that I do is fun. And if it's not fun, I'm not doing it. So then time just doesn't seem to really impact me.
Right. I mean, they say what? If you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Right.
So, have you always been this way or later in life did you
No, I think I've
pivot.
Did you have a real job once?
No, I've always, I mean, literally I was born on television, yeah. So there's that. And then I was an actress when I was a little kid, and then I left acting and I went behind the camera, and I've just always had this entrepreneurial drive and spirit to, you know, live my life according to my terms. Huh. And it works most of the time. Sometimes it's really stressful because it means, okay, produced porn or something, I'd probably make a lot more money. Mm. But, you know, I just did make a commitment to myself right around almost 30 years old. There's a story in my book about this where I was working a lot and I was doing, I almost got the job of my dreams of being getting a good executive position in a studio, which is what I really wanted. And then there was this moment where I was like, I don't want that anymore. And that was a big turning point for me because it was a time for me to say, you know what, you really want to spend your life going after what screams in your soul to do. And that's right. Pretty much what I do all the time.
Right. Well, I mean, but you started with talking about gratitude, and I think that is a huge part of it because there are a lot of people who that would stress out living life like this and not having that consistency and not having that safety net.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah. And I'm grateful that I get to do what I want in my life and still live the life that I live. And it's my choice. I mean, we can live in the nice house or we can live in the small apartment. I get to choose all of that. And I'm grateful that that somehow every day I wake up and I get to be creative and I get to write and I get to film things and I get to talk to people. And somehow that creates enough finances for me to live the life that I live.
Are your kids like you? Are they little mini-me's or are they polar opposites?
No, they kind of are. And my daughter was just interviewed for CBS.
Huh?
On her position on the mandatory vaccination law.
Oh, good.
Oh.
Because I had to go.
How old is your daughter?
She's 12. She's going into seventh grade, and she's never been – they've never had any vaccinations. And so she had to go. We got her some vaccinations because it's a complicated issue. But it was very frustrating for her. There's an article on my site today called Free Thinking Kids,
mm-hmm.
Which talks about that I've always let my kids have an opinion and express what they think they would like to see happen. Now they know that they don't always get that because mom's going to make the final call right now.
Right.
But just my kids, I think, are pretty good at decision-making, really thinking things through, having an opinion, expressing an opinion. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think they're like me like that.
So what are her thoughts on are you talking about mandatory vaccines, all vaccines or mandatory, HPV?
Mandatory yet. That won't be because Gardasil, because the laws, I mean, the research on that has already been proven that it's not a very good thing to do. But on the mandatory vaccinations, I don't personally, her opinion is the same as mine. She's like, look, it's my body and I don't think anyone should ever tell me what to do with it. And I agree with her. I think, you know, right now people can say, here's my take on the vaccination thing. Right now, people can say, well, it's a good thing and you should do this. But then that's just the beginning. We're sort of opening a big Pandora's box when we start allowing the government to dictate what we eat, what we put into our bodies, and that they can make laws around that. Because this might sound like a really innocuous thing, like, oh, it's just vaccines, but that's where it always starts. And so I think as citizens, we have to stand up and say, you know what, I'm going to draw the line there in terms of what the government, it's like responsibilities are, and that's not one of them.
Right. Well, what would you say to people who, like in junior high, if they didn't have it mandatory and other kids were exposed? I mean, I know there's like the herd immunity.
Yeah,
but
I mean, we could do a 6-hour show on that. And actually, my ex-husband is probably better. He's a chiropractor and been studying natural health for 35 years. And he's really much better educated to explain this than I am. But here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
If vaccines actually work, then if you're vaccinated and I'm not, I'll get sick and you won't. If the theory, because we have to start at the beginning, like we can talk about the herd mentality, we can talk about all this stuff, but what nobody, the argument nobody really wants to spend time really focusing on is that if vaccines work, then you won't get sick. But the truth is vaccines don't actually always work. And the statistics are that they actually, most of them leave our bodies, which is why we have to get them again and we have to get them again and we have to get them again. There are many other things that we could be doing. Like, for instance, here's a crazy idea. Let's not poison our food. Like, let's just start there. And right. then maybe we yeah. don't have to worry about this stuff.
I couldn't agree with you more there. I mean,
that's it's so weird. Here's a crazy idea.
I don't
let's not spray chemicals all over everything we eat. What a weird idea. Oh my
I don't know anybody other than those huge corporations that make the food and they can do bigger, better, faster with these chemicals.
Like, it's
that,
insanity.
Like, why? And there are plenty of other countries that don't do this to their food.
Well, we're the only country in the world, I think, and I might get the stat wrong right now, that like all most main first world countries are banning Monsanto. We're actually, nobody wants to say this, but even the Democratic Party is owned by Monsanto. I mean, this country is owned by two major corporations, Nestle, who's basically stealing all of our water.
Right.
And that's another thing, right? It's like, here's a crazy idea. Let's not sell
this episode is
water.
No longer sponsored by Nestle. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, and Monsanto.
I'm kidding.
So and like, this is part of what Meaningful Mom is about. It's like, we have to start paying attention to these things. Like, everyone's screaming about this election, like, where it's either Trump or Hillary.
Right.
What I ask people is, okay, so who's running for Congress in your area? Who's running for state representative in your area?
Right.
Who's running for the school board in your area? Because right now in Los Angeles, as an example, while nobody was looking, our like environmental board got completely taken over by Nestle cronies. Like, for several years, there's been a really strong group there fighting to keep Nestle from taking our water.
Right.
And just this year, while nobody was paying attention, they're out, and now Nestle basically is going to start taking all the water around Angeles National Forest, all that stuff.
I've been saying that for a long time, that I think that most people are pretty apathetic when it comes to voting and politics, unless it's on a big, huge stage. And then we complain about the laws that are passed.
Right.
We complain about, you know, minimum wage going up or the park being closed or, you know, criminals being released in early parole, whatever it is. But we weren't paying attention to when the bills came up and the laws were getting passed and your district attorneys are being voted in the jail.
Let me post about Trump on Facebook.
Yeah. And so I mean, I've been saying that for a long time. And I mean, this past election, I went and I voted, and there was one section that I didn't do my research, and I was really mad at myself because I was stuck there. I'm like, wait, I don't know these people. I had all the other ones. I had my sample ballot all filled out, and there was one. I'm like, I don't know what to do. And so I'm like, do I leave it blank? Do I just go with name recognition? Like, I would,
yeah,
you know,
that's
pick
what
a horse.
Do. Yeah.
You know, I mean, but that's what a lot
I
of people do. I did leave it blank, but I do. I really do try to do my research.
Me
but
too.
You know, it's you have to be aware of where you get your information from too, because half the time I'm reading and going, wait, did that doesn't make sense, and then I go to try to find you know, opposing view or supporting view, and then I feel like I've got myself lost in the
it's the
workload into trying to get yourself educated on things that shouldn't. I mean, and then the ones that are say like vote yes to ban or no to support.
Oh my god,
so
I think they try to confuse you on
purpose.
Yeah, they seriously try to vote yes to say no to the yes.
Right.
You know, it's like, what?
And I understand. I mean, we're all busy, but a big mission behind Meaningful Mom Mag, for instance, is that I wanted to teach my kids how to spend more time focusing on what's meaningful to them.
Right.
And so if it's meaningful to me that my kids have, you know, clean food and drinking water, then it's worth my time. Whereas that may mean that I'm going to spend 25 minutes less, you know, watching the Kardashians, because I'm going to take that time.
And that will actually help the whole world.
Right. So it's about what's meaningful and value to you, and where are you putting your time? And, you know, that's where you start to feel grateful. You start to have a lot more peace in your life, because you feel like, I'm actually living my purpose. I'm living my integrity, and I'm living my values for real. I'm not just posting them on Facebook, you know, and hoping everyone thinks I'm cool.
Are you an anomaly amongst the people that you surround yourself with, or do you find that you surround yourself with like-minded people?
I definitely, in my circle of friends, have a very like-minded people, but I do spend a lot of time with my work going out into places where it's, you know, what I like to do is be a little bit of a bridge, you know, to these certain things. Like, you know, I make a lot of my films are spiritually based, not Christian spiritual, new age spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of crazy woo-woo stuff going on. And like, it can
I
be,
love crazy woo-woo stuff.
I like crazy woo-woo stuff, but it freaks people out. Like, you know, they don't want to think about shoving a crystal up their booty to like heal their sinuses, you know, that scares them. So you want to try, like what I try to do a lot is talk to people in ways that sort of
to ease them into it, really.
Ease them into it, to bridge that gap. So, but my close
maybe
circle,
not start with a crystal.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. So, you know, I like to be around. I like to,
have you always been that way? Have you always been this open-minded kind of like sponge to the world?
Yeah, I think I have been. I think I was kind of just born that way. Mm. And my kids are definitely that way. But I will say this. One of the things that was
when you were married to a chiropractor, and they tend to be that way too.
Yeah, he's way woo-woo. I'm like, you know, fanatical Christian compared to him. But But what I would say, one of the things I love, like, is it's, and it's in the community that I am now, and when I first moved back to LA several years ago, I like to create mom groups. Mm-hmm. So with, you know, it's harder now that my daughter's a preteen and like doesn't want to really be seen with me. But when they were younger, you know, you'd have groups over for play dates. And I've always had made a big deal about having a big yard. And so one of the things I like to do is bring all the moms together and let the kids play. And the moms, we would all drink wine.
Right.
Like, I'm not an alcoholic, even though I sound like one, because I'm always like, let's drink wine. But
we're not judging.
Yeah. We're just following right along with you.
I'm
like, God, we just wonder where our invitation is.
Exactly. Big yard, young kids, wine. Okay.
I don't live that far. But what I found in creating those groups was, like, one of the groups just a few years ago, and we're all still friends, we literally had Muslims, Jews, Christians. I was always, they always called me the resident hippie girl, because mm-hmm. like I was the one crazy, weird, wacko girl. People from Senegal, all over the world, and we would all get together. And what I found was that you could look at this group and go, wow, that's a really diverse group of women. But what was interesting is that we were actually very like-minded once we got really down to the core values mm-hmm. of what we were looking for. So I think most moms and most women probably have very similar, you may look at it in terms of Christianity and God, and I may look at it in terms of source and universe, but we're actually talking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think most humans are actually more like-minded than we think.
I've always said that if we use the word God and just know that you could have your own definition, and it may not even be a spiritual being, it may just be love.
I call him Bob. I just refer to it as Bob.
That's
Bobby,
awesome.
Feminine Bob. It's just Bob.
My dad would really love that. But, you know, if we all just kind of like, if somebody says God, know that, oh, this is what we consider it. And we wouldn't be fighting. Like, are we seriously fighting over?
We like to be offended. Think about it for just a second. When you're righteous, doesn't that like juices? So I get all nerded out in brain. But what happens is that our brains produce chemicals based on our emotions. And so what happens is we love, humans have a tendency to super be addicted to the chemical, the peptide in your brain of annoyed and pissed off.
Mm.
We all, and so what happens is you get annoyed and pissed off, like you get this super yummy chemical juice bath, and your brain's like, ooh, I like this. And so you just looking to be annoyed at somebody. We love to be offended because then we're right. And if we're right, we're safe and our brain is exploding with yummy chemicals. Whereas if you just stop and go, well, I don't have to really argue about this. That's part of what my free thinking article for kids is about, is like telling my kids all the time, like, choose your battles. Like, is this worth it?
Yeah, I'm definitely a choose your battles. I'd say that like I'm kind of the outcast in my family because my family gets worked up about a lot of things and I just don't get sucked into the drama. And so then they assume that I'm being distant and cold. I'm like, no,
it's all your fault.
Yeah, but I'm exhausted. Like I'm really.
How dare you not get sucked
up?
You're not engaged.
But that's kind of, I'm like, yeah, like, can you believe it? Yeah, I can. You know, and they're like, what?
You're like, I've lived 44 years. I can kind of, I've seen it.
I just feel like I don't have the energy, you know, like that juice bath sounds suffocating to me,
right,
you know? And so. But
I'm so grossed out by the juice bath. I'm sorry.
Is it moist? I hate the word moist. Actually, my son, every time he hears the word moist, he's like, my mom hates that word. But I don't have the bandwidth for it. And then there will be things that I get myself worked up about that I laugh at myself going, why is this the thing that I'm getting myself all? And same with my kid. He's very similar in that regard. Like he is so easy about most things, but it'll be the lamest thing that will set him off. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give you that. I'm going to let you have that tantrum because.
But it's not lame to him. Yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, but in the big scheme of things, we let the big things go. And sometimes it's the little things for whatever reason. It's like a thorn.
Right.
Literally.
Well, but that's pretty evolved. Most people just spend a lot of their time feeling frustrated, annoyed, overwhelmed. And
being a victim to their own
creation. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of it is, I mean, that's kind of one of the reasons why I like neuroscience and brain chemistry. Because for me, when I finally understood like how my brain actually works, how I attach a meaning and then the meaning becomes a belief and then I live it in the world, then all of a sudden it made me less reactive.
Right.
Because I was like, oh, I'll give you a funny story about my boyfriend. So my book was coming out a couple of years ago, and I
– Now, when you say my book, tell us which book.
Oh, Tipping Sacred Cows.
Because we have actually put both of your books on broadcast.com.
Nice.
So that way, direct links to it.
Nice.
Yeah.
So Tipping
Sacred Cows is my book.
Yes.
That's the book that came out a few years ago. And I don't like to shop for clothing. One of my issues is I have a lot of issues around that. I'm never good at putting clothes together. My daughter dresses me. She isn't with
me. It's adorable.
She picks my outfits for me. She like puts them together and says, wear this and this and this, this jewelry. I got to tell her like the bangle thing is too much because she's the one that put all the
No, it's great as long as you're not on radio.
So I went out shopping for like a day by myself and I come home with this dress and I'm excited. I feel good about it. I put the dress on and I go walking outside and I say, honey, what do you think of my dress? And so his first was that he laughed.
Oh.
And the second thing he said was, wow, I really like that whole cow thing you've got going on.
Oh.
And so,
like, oh, honey.
My first reaction could have been to be like, you just called me a fat cow and run into the bathroom and be upset. But that's what most people stop at. They'll hear that, which feeds into their belief system about I'm ugly or I'm fat or I'm short or I don't look good in dresses. And they won't actually go, wait a second, this person loves me and they don't want to hurt my feelings. And so I said, so I think you just called me a cow is what I asked him. I said, can you explain to me what you really meant? And he goes, Betsy, your book is called Tipping Sacred Cows. The dress is black and white. I'm calling you clever. And
you're a clever cow, Betsy.
And I was like, wow, I would have totally missed the compliment if I had just run off. And most of us just take that first instant response from our brain and run with it. And that's why we end up getting an upset.
Well, and we flip out. And then later they're like, oh, this is what I meant. You're like, oh, I take that back.
Yeah, right?
Sorry.
Oops, we do. But we, you know, that's how we operate.
Yeah. But I noticed that with my kids too. I try to, you were saying like pick your battles and Kim's good at that. But just trying to teach that, like, you don't always have to be right. So I have one child who will say like, the car is red. And the other one, no, it's not. No, it's not. It's magenta. Like, and it's just like, oh my gosh. Like, it took me many, many, many years to not be that person though.
Yeah.
Because I was that person. I had to make sure. And I, even online, I often will start typing and I'm like, oh my gosh, it is not my responsibility to fight this battle.
Right.
And I stepped, that's when I knew at first that I was actually starting to become an adult. Uh-huh. And I was in my 40s. So
it takes some of us
longer. I didn't feel like I was an adult until I got divorced.
Really?
Yeah.
That is very grown-up-y.
Side comment. What?
That is very grown-up.
Yeah.
To get divorced?
Good. Yeah. Not to get married, buy a house, or have a child, but to get divorced was my grown-up moment.
You know what I say now, actually, to totally digress? I love being divorced.
I was happily divorced. Someone said, what? I'm like, I'm happily divorced. Oh, really? I'm like, yeah, I chose it. I'm happy.
It took me a while because I love my kids and they're a big part of my life. But right now, my ex-husband and I do 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off. So wow. He has the kids because they're older now. So he has them for 2 weeks. So for 2 weeks, I get to go and work and do all the cool stuff that I get to do. And then he gets his 2 weeks. And I actually think this is a really intelligent parenting choice. I think somebody called me recently, a friend of mine. I have a guest room. And she said, can I rent your guest room for a month? And I said, why? You're married. Is everything okay? Is everything? She's like, no, my husband and I just decided that we both have so much work going on that we want to rent an extra room somewhere so that during the time when I get to work, I can go over there and work. And I was like, that's exactly right. You know, she's like, yeah, I need my space. And so, you know, there you go.
Didn't you try to do that with Jeff, some kind of, Jackie, with your husband, some kind of co-parenting? No, like a visitation schedule?
Yeah.
A custody arrangement?
I, it's funny. I'm happily married, but I thought it would be brilliant, if I do say so for myself, for a year to have a custody schedule. And so we still live together. We're still a family. But, you know, you notice how some guys are not necessarily involved with their children. And then they get a divorce and they're like father of the year.
Right.
You know, and they're like making dinners and buying birthday presents for parties. And they're doing all of these things that they're not involved with. So it was during a time where I think we were both working and we've gotten a little bit better with balance as far as. Kim has actually helped me through a lot of it, like recognizing my strengths and not expecting him to be strong in certain areas. Yeah. And, you know, so we've gotten to a really good place. But I was like, you know what? I think we should have a custody agreement. And every Wednesday night and every Wednesday night and every other weekend, like a lot of dads have, you are in charge. So if there is a back to school night or there's a conference or there's just dinner or there's a class or whatever it is, like Wednesdays, that's your day. And if you have to leave early because somebody's sick, that's your day, you know. And then on the weekend, every other weekend, I'll still be with you,
But he has to go buy the birthday present and he has to plan the schedule. And if he wants to do something social,
how did this work?
He said no.
Oh, that is a great idea.
Isn't it?
That's really
my next husband and I are totally going to do this. Right. Where we, I'm just kidding.
But you know, I have a friend.
He told me if I get one more dog, then I'll need an ex-husband.
Oh, no. I have a friend who just recently had a baby and I've been talking to her about this very thing because her thing has become, well, the baby only likes me. I'm like, you're setting yourself up for a lifetime of doing everything by yourself.
Yes.
If
yeah.
you don't teach that man
and that baby,
that man and the baby, true, yeah, well, that he needs to participate, because if he doesn't start now, when the kid's five, you can't expect him to.
Yeah. Right. Yep. And I mean, especially because there won't be that connection,
right,
that you have. I remember when my daughter was coming home, we adopted her from Taiwan, and that when we were learning, doing some of the classes, and I already had two biological kids at that time, so clearly I knew how to parent. But they also teach you, because it's a game changer,
right,
you know, when you're going international and the child's a year and a half. And like, so I was really glad that we did this training. But they were talking about, you know, bonding and where it happens. And it's, mm-hmm, it's between where the child has a need and where that need is met.
Right.
And so if a child, like whether it's a dirty diaper or food or, you know, comfort or whatever it is, like having those basic needs met at a young age is really important.
Yeah.
So when you have a parent, whether it's a dad or a mom, because it can be either, but that isn't involved necessarily with some of those things. And I don't mean stay at home, quit your job, right, all that, because,
no, but,
you know,
yeah,
but not to make those conscious choices, mm-hmm, to do that. I think it's tough when they do show up at 5 years old,
right,
and they don't understand,
right,
why that child isn't bonded to them in the same way.
Right.
And it's intrinsic. It's like within it, you know, it's chemical. It's within us to have
again.
That. It's those juices, you know? And so you can't recreate those juices.
No.
You know? And
well,
so I think it's really important.
The child has built up a belief system around mommy will do
their
this,
worth,
daddy will, mm-hmm, do that, and their worth and all sorts of interesting stuff. I mean, it's crazy when you think about, like I said, sometime, it feels like 6 hours ago now, in a good way. Like I said that, like, you know, by the time we're eight, we've already basically built a story in our head of how,
right,
the world is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we're building the story.
Right, right. I even told my husband last night, because I make mistakes, you know, every day.
What?
I know.
What?
Shocking.
I'm
but last night,
one
of my kids asked my husband something. Dad, can I, whatever it was, insert, you know, fill in the blank. No. Please? No. But it's just going to take a second. No. I just have to do one thing. Fine, do one thing. And I turned to my husband. I'm like, you wonder, because he tells me sometimes that, you know, they won't listen to me like the way they'll listen to you. I'm like, you mentioned that they don't listen to you. That right there.
Right.
They know. Now you've taught them it takes five times.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
We are.
And then so they
monkeys.
Start at five times.
We're just programmable monkeys, basically. And so, and kids will
see, we're all moldable.
I mean, unless we decide to step out of the mold and become conscious and go, wait a second, I can actually consciously make a choice here versus a reactionary choice, which is we're most of the time sitting in survival and reaction. That's all we're doing. We're,
mm-hmm,
like, but if you can stop and go, wait a second, I have the ability to,
right,
consciously choose here, you know, and that's different. And when you start living that way, then, you know, you can start doing more of what you love. You can start doing the life that you want because you're not stuck in that fear response mode all the time.
Right. I mean, when I turned 40 a few years ago, that was actually my goal for life, was to respond, not react.
Mm-hmm.
And again, my friend Kim over here taught me, because she works with teenagers, you know, and I think if you can work with teenagers, you can
work
with anybody.
With
and you work with me. I'm like an older teenager. No, but you were teaching me that when you react to, mm-hmm, things, like, so if the kid is like, hey, I'm shooting up drugs, and you're like, you know,
right,
obviously that's a bad example. They're no longer going to
trust you
and share with you. So,
right,
even if it was a kid who's like, I took this candy bar, mm-hmm, from the store. And if you're like, oh my gosh, you are in so much trouble. Like, the kid is not going to trust. The kid's,
right,
going to hide those things,
right,
and it just gets worse. So,
right,
I try really hard to respond,
right,
to like take my time, not necessarily, you know, it may be immediate, but it's not necessarily a reaction as much.
Well, and the,
right,
cool thing is, like,
thanks, Kim.
You're welcome.
I like that.
This moment's been brought to you by.
You know, we learn as we go. And so one of the things that I used to do is like, go, oh my God, I've totally screwed up my kid, because I've done all the things that you just said. But what's really interesting about, and amazing about kids is, like, if you just keep, I've gone to my daughter, for instance, and said, wow, you know, I noticed that I react badly when you tell me this. And so I really apologize for that. I'm going to be better at that. And then rebuild the trust again. because it was really cool for her to be able to hear her mom say, you know, I was doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that that wasn't the best way to do that, and I'm sorry, is as powerful as just getting it right all the time.
I always tell the students that we work with, you know, that if you tell your parents what you need, give them the opportunity to learn. Because, and when you come back and you say, I made a mistake, or I was rethinking, you know, what we talked about, the kids love that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I said, my son and I were driving home yesterday, and apparently it's known that I'm a really fast driver. And so we were saying, he's like, yeah, mom. He's like, you do drive really fast. He goes, especially when you're mad.
No.
And I'm like, what? And he's like, you picked me up from school really? One day and you were mad. He's like, and you took off. He's like, I was actually really scared. And I'm like, babe, why didn't you tell me? He's like, because you were mad. And I said, let me tell you something right now. And I said, I may not have known that I was driving mad. I said, if I'm ever doing something that makes you feel fearful or that you have like a nervousness about it, I said, you need to tell me, you know? And I said, I probably didn't notice. He's like, are you sure? Because you were really scary that day. And I'm like, absolutely, you know? But yeah. But the fact that I could stop and say, I should not be driving that. I should be driving fast, but I shouldn't be driving mad and fast.
Right.
He was like, oh, cool. Like,
right.
He earned a stripe, part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's up to me to be able to respond appropriately because sometimes he'll do that and then I'll get mad. And then he's like, but you told me to tell you. You told me to come to you. You told me to be honest with you. Now, what's your part in this, mom? Right. Like, he calls me out, you know, which
and
is
that's
great.
That's awesome. My kids do the same thing. Like, there's nothing better than having your kids, like, shoot back some pearl of
wisdom
to them while but with my kids lately too, like, you know, I have a lot of stuff going on, and especially when I was getting divorced and it was stressful financially, you know, I would go to them and say, hey, you know what, I'm having a hard day, and so it's not an excuse, I'm not giving my self permission to react to you, but I'm just letting you know where I'm at. And so it was great because then they could build some empathy. They could go, you know, I don't need to go bug mom about this right now. She's having a hard time. Or when they did come to me, they had more empathy.
Right.
And they could also say the same thing. Like, you know, now my daughter will say, God, I'm feeling cranky today. Oh, okay. So I'm going to just be present and aware to you being cranky so that I can help you through that.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, I think it's really hard sometimes to not want to fix when the kids are feeling cranky or upset about something. And I noticed that where if you have a problem, I'm a really, really good mother for about 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then if you're not past it, I'm over it. No, but
fix this.
Because I want to fix. I want to fix everything. So it's like if you're telling me this is what's happening, it's like, oh, okay. Instead of just listening and letting them work through it.
Yeah,
and so that's one thing I'm working through. But we only have a couple minutes. And so I want to get back to Meaningful Mom. So what are some tips we can give our listeners to become a more meaningful mom?
Well, the first thing I think everybody should do,
or a parent, but
I think everybody should do is spend some time with you and your kids talking about what's meaningful and what's important to you and what you value, and write them down. Like, for instance, family time might be really valuable to you, or playing sports might be really valuable to your son or your daughter. And so get really deeply connected with what are your meanings and values. And then every day, take actions around making sure that those are your priorities. So if you guys say, you know, something meaningful to us is healthy eating, then, you know, making sure that you plan the meals for the week so that you can go to the grocery store, that you can buy the food that you want, versus getting so flattered that you're eating fast food, because that's contradictory to what's meaningful to you. So when you start to make choices about what you're going to buy, what you're going to do, and how you're going to live, your first question is, well, does this fit in with my meaning and purpose? And if the answer is no, you should not do it. You just don't do it. And it makes decision making really easily, because then I can just go, this doesn't fit in alignment with my meaning and purpose, so I'm not going to do it. And when you start to really act that way in your life, you start to realize my life is not overwhelming. I've stopped saying the words, oh my God, I'm so busy, because that's just a perpetuating program of my life must be so horrible that I don't have time. I'm like, just, I changed the language, and that's everything I do from the moment I wake up to even when I'm sleeping is in alignment with my meaning and purpose. And so therefore, I'm living a meaningful and purposeful life.
So that's amazing. Where did you get most of your education in this? As far as like, I mean, do you listen to a lot of other podcasts, read books? Who's your guru?
Well, I don't have a specific guru. This all started when I made What the Bleep Do We Know. I don't know if you know that movie. But so What the Bleep Do We Know was a hugely popular documentary on quantum physics, molecular biology, and neuroscience. And essentially what it was is a movie about how your thoughts affect your reality. And so for me, the first realization was what I think and what I believe is what I see and what I live. And so just being really getting really clear and conscious about what am I thinking,
right?
How am I acting in the world was the beginning step. So I started there, and then from there, you know, I've probably read every book, done every seminar, you know, hung out with way too many gurus.
Hanging out with the Dalai Lama. So where can people find that? So I know whatthebleep.com. Yeah, I just
that's
found
What the Bleep.
Yeah. And they can watch it there.
I think you can watch it there, and it's not on Netflix or anything like that, but you can buy the DVD, or I think you can stream it there probably.
Cool. We'll put it's it on cool our website
movie.
Too.
Yeah. It's a cool movie.
Yeah. So
I saw that back then, honestly. Probably,
really?
I think I did. Yeah.
If you have like
it's like 2003 or 2004. Okay.
What the Bleep came out on the same day that Facebook launched.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That's a big day.
And watch it with your kids. Like, they might get bored, uh-huh. but then, like, right now my son's 8, and if you go to YouTube and you start Google, like, What the Bleep animations, we have all these really
fun
animations.
Awesome.
On, like, the double slit experiment and, like, the nature of reality. And there's one called Flatland where we talk about two-dimensional beings and three-dimensional. And they're really fun animations. And kids dig them.
Wow. Mm. Well, we have to go. This has been a joy to have you here.
Thank you
so much. Betsy Chassy. They can find you at Betsy Chassy, Chasse, .net,
yes.
Correct? And it has all your projects there.
It does. And meaningfulmommag.com.
Excellent. And your podcast, Life Unscripted.
Yep.
And you're launching
iTunes.
Radical Dating tomorrow,
yeah.
Tuesday. Oh my gosh. Congratulations.
Follow me on Facebook. If you follow me on Facebook,
it'll all be there.
Figure out what
the awesome. Thanks.
Or Twitter or whatever.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you later in the week.
You're listening to Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougal. They're huge in anywhere other than somewhere that you've been before.